From Washington, this is Talking Tax. I'm Amanda Icone. This week, we're talking about taxes on legal marijuana sales. Recreational marijuana is expected to generate nearly $2 billion in excise and sales tax revenue this year alone. But it's a massive undertaking when you are collecting those taxes in $1 increments. Legal cannabis dispensaries and marijuana growers are flush with cash, and they are bringing bags of it with them to pay those taxes at city halls and state office buildings around the country. It's a security issue, a tax compliance issue, and a resource drain to keep track of all that green. Staff correspondent Brenna Goth joins me today from Phoenix, Arizona, to talk about the innovative options states are vetting in an effort to make it easier and safer to collect taxes on marijuana, which is still considered an illegal substance under federal law. Welcome, Brenna.
Thanks for having me.
Brenna, paint a picture for us. Describe what's happening today at city halls and county office buildings around the country.
Right now, we have a situation in the country where a bunch of states have legalized recreational marijuana and even more have some kind of medical marijuana program. And as states have legalized this, they have also begun taxing the substance and sales of it. So you have all of these companies that are now operating in the market and they have to pay their state and local taxes. However, a lot of them don't have bank accounts and they're actually getting mostly cash from their customers. So this has created a situation in a lot of places where you have these cannabis companies coming to state and local tax offices or city halls with, you know, duffel bags full of cash or maybe manila envelopes full of bills or, you know, backpacks or something like this. And they're going to pay their state and local taxes this way and having to stay there as people are counting the money, you know, as the money gets loaded into armored trucks to be carried off site and all of these other issues that cash creates.
How much money are we talking about?
So the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy has looked at some of the state and local sales and excise tax revenues. And this is just for states with legal recreational sales. And they found that in 2018, this amounted to about $1.3 billion. And the projection for 2019 was $1.6 billion.
It's a lot of cash. In your story, you describe Hollywood movie amounts of money. Cannabis owners aren't necessarily paying all of those tax bills in $100 bills.
Yeah, that's right. That quote was actually from an official in Reno, Nevada. And he was talking about the fact that if you were to put all of this money together, you know, it really would kind of look like it came out of a Hollywood movie. Like you might see someone opening a suitcase full of these kind of crisply stacked $20 bills. But in Reno, what they're seeing is this money is really just coming out of kind of the cash registers of the business. So it might just be crumpled $1 bills or, you know, they might be bringing it in $100 bills, but they could just be bringing all kinds of denominations. They're not necessarily in these neat stacks with all the bills facing the same way. So if you can imagine, as this is getting into the thousands of dollars, that becomes kind of a chore for someone to actually have to sort and count.
What about federal income taxes? These businesses also owe money to the IRS. Are they paying the IRS in cash too?
Yeah, so that is also an issue for some of these companies. And I will point out that some of these companies have been able to find banks to work with them somehow, whether it's a state bank or a credit union. So not every single company is paying in cash, but it does present challenges for IRS tax collection as well. And I know one of my Bloomberg tax colleagues who helped with this story talked to someone in Denver who was saying that there's only one IRS office in Denver that accepts cash tax payments. So as you can imagine, for a city that big, then that becomes really crowded around tax time when all these companies are trying to pay their bills.
Are state and local officials worried that they aren't collecting as much as they should because of these cash-only payments?
I've heard a couple concerns about the cash tax payments. One thing is the compliance issue. You know, it's a little bit trickier to track all of the cash that's coming into these marijuana businesses to know exactly what they should be paying. And one other issue that I heard some officials raise is the fact that because marijuana businesses are locked out of a lot of traditional banking services, such as loans and things like that, that they may actually be using some of that cash to pay for other business expenses. And then once tax time rolls around, you know, they might be kind of looking for that elsewhere or not quite up to date on what they should be paying.
So we should explain why legal cannabis businesses only have cash. You've alluded to it. Why can't they pay their tax bill with a check or a credit card?
Right. So the main issue with this is that cannabis is still considered illegal under federal law. So while a lot of states have legalized it in various forms, it's still a federally illegal substance. When we talk about banking, that is mostly an issue for nationally chartered banks because they are regulated at the federal level. These banks don't necessarily want to touch something that is illegal under federal law, and they don't want to, you know, get in trouble with their regulators or face any kind of problems with that. So there are banks that have been willing to work with these companies. There are state-chartered banks that are regulated differently, and there are also credit unions that are regulated separately, or they are regulated differently than these nationally chartered banks. So there have been the opportunity for financial service companies to work with cannabis companies, but the big nationally chartered ones, that's still difficult.
States are also looking to ease some of those banking restrictions where they can. What steps are they considering, and how much of an impact can they make at a state level?
Right. So states are doing a couple different things. Some states are trying to work with credit unions or other institutions within their states to see how they can kind of open the doors a little and maybe get some of those banks more comfortable working with cannabis companies. And I know that's something that Washington has worked on a lot. There's a process now that the licensees are undergoing really detailed background checks, and then some of that information is shared with banks, and the hope there that they're more comfortable working with some of these cannabis companies. And what I've heard from regulators in Washington is they actually have reduced pretty much all of their cash cannabis tax payments. I know that in Ohio as well, there is a credit union that has publicly said that they would work with cannabis companies, and that has alleviated some of the pressure there.
And when you say they go through background checks, that is part of the process just to be a legal dispensary, or in Washington state, they have to go through a background check?
So I think the idea there is really just making banks and credit unions be more comfortable working with cannabis companies. So, you know, making sure that the banks really have a lot of information on what these companies are doing, you know, who's running them, all of that, so that the cannabis companies provide that to the banks, and the banks might be more comfortable saying like, okay, we'll work with you and we'll offer you financial services.
Did lawmakers consider the challenges of a cash-only business when they were drafting legislation to legalize marijuana? I mean, did they ever think that this could potentially be an outcome, that these businesses would be operating without a bank account?
That is definitely something that has come up in various states that are either legalizing recreational marijuana or have some kind of medical marijuana program. And this is something we saw conversations about recently in Illinois, you know, that legalized recreational cannabis, saying, okay, well, if we have this industry, who are the banks that are going to be working with them? Or, you know, can we at least make sure that they have access to some part of this? And that's a conversation that has been happening in states. I also think that there are some states that have been really ready to move ahead in launching this industry and really hoping that there's some kind of federal solution or maybe legalization at the federal level soon enough that they can put in some workarounds in the meantime and then have a permanent solution, hopefully not too far in the future.
I want to come back to the workarounds in a second, but there has also been legislation floated at the federal level as well.
That's right. There have been some federal efforts to ease banking restrictions for cannabis companies. With a lot of the arguments, you know, some of the things I've touched on about the issues that cash create, and we have all of these states that do have this industry that don't have access to some of the services that they need. So there has been legislation introduced in Congress. From the people I've talked to, they don't necessarily know how quickly it's going to move and what that will look like at the end. So I think that is why states are kind of jumping in the meantime to try to get some solutions on the ground.
So talk about some of those solutions. What are some of the ideas that states have been considering in the meantime?
Yeah, Nevada is one of the more recent states to take a look at this. And Nevada is actually working to launch a pilot program that would create a digital coin or token system for marijuana businesses to pay their bills and to pay their taxes, maybe pay landlords or other people who are participating in the industry. And the idea with that one is that the state would create its own system, and it would create a stable token, you know, that $1 never changes in this token, it doesn't fluctuate at all. But it's really just a way to try to get cash out of the industry a little bit and give these cannabis companies a way to pay some of these bills more easily. And the benefit for the state being that they would be able to pay their taxes this way as well, which would maybe help with compliance and also just make it a little bit easier for some of those tax collectors. There have been some previous efforts kind of along these lines in Hawaii, which did not create its own system, but it did work to have a credit union in a different state work with some of its medical marijuana companies, and then also to say that customers could use a payment app that linked to their bank account and let them pay for some of their purchases within a dispensary without using cash.
What about cryptocurrency? Has that been floated as an idea anywhere?
That has been floated as an idea. I know some states have talked about that. There is Ohio that lets people pay their business taxes with Bitcoin, and I know some people have talked about implications of that possibly for the cannabis industry. I think there are some concerns of when states are creating this themselves, they're looking at all kinds of digital currencies right now, trying to figure out what the best system would be and how the transactions would be tracked and how to protect the customer.
But the industry itself, the legal cannabis industry itself, is leery of cryptocurrency. Why is that? What are their concerns?
Yeah, that is something I've talked to some dispensary owners about. And my colleague from Bloomberg Tax, who helped with this story, did as well. And one dispensary owner told us that there are just concerns about how any of these types of systems are executed. So you want to make sure that if you are launching some kind of new financial payment system, that you are not hiding any transaction information, you know, that there's no possibility of money laundering, and that you really follow all of the protections that you would have in some kind of traditional banking system. And so I think that, you know, as far as whether people will use these systems or not, the states that are designing them really have to make sure that people are confident that information is going to be secure and that transactions will be properly tracked.
What other challenges did you hear about as you were working on this story?
I think one thing to consider is that a lot of states are looking for solutions, or maybe they're giving some kind of policy guidance. But a lot of officials and legislators I talked to said that whatever a state does, it's not really the best solution, because then you have a patchwork of policies and systems throughout the country that are really just kind of being put in place until there's some type of federal solution. So even these states that are putting in workarounds, a lot of the people pushing them told me that ideally they wouldn't even need them, that there would just be banking available for the cannabis industry throughout the country. So I think that's one consideration. And then another consideration is whether people will actually use these systems. So some of them focus more just on the dispensaries themselves, but some of them maybe are a little more consumer facing. And I know there's been some questions about whether a consumer who is buying something at a dispensary would want to change their cash to tokens in order to pay for it. Or in the case of Hawaii, there was some question after the change from the Obama to the Trump administration of whether people wanted their bank accounts linked to this and to have that statement and that record there. So there is a question if, you know, cash can ever really be eliminated from the industry in a really major way.
In other words, the consumers themselves, the people frequenting, the people shopping at the dispensaries don't necessarily want to pay with their debit card or some other
exactly
and payment process.
A lot of consumers probably will continue to prefer paying in cash. And so while some states are looking at trying to get consumers into paying in some kind of more digital format, other ones are just focusing on the dispensaries themselves, realizing that cash is always going to be part of this.
Well, I thought it was interesting, too, that you found that there were ripple effects to employees of the dispensaries, contractors they work with, maybe the electrician or the plumber. You mentioned payments to landlords, the problems with the cash-only system is not limited to just the dispensary, in other words.
Exactly. And that is why states like Nevada are trying to create essentially some type of limited banking functions for these cannabis companies, because it really does affect anyone who touches the industry. So, these cannabis companies have a lot of people to pay, whether it is payroll or they're paying their electric bills or their landlords. And, you know, I think at least in the past, there have been some horror stories of people somehow being related to this industry, having bank accounts shut down or facing some kind of issues with that. And it creates a big hassle, as you can imagine, for the cannabis companies themselves trying to really handle all of this and keep up on their bills.
Brenna Goth, state correspondent from Bloomberg Law, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And here's some of the week's tax and accounting news. Find these headlines and more at news.bloombergtax.com. The Senate Finance Committee ramped up its investigation into tax-advantaged land deals by issuing subpoenas for information about syndicated conservation easements. These deals involve multiple people claiming tax deductions for property donated for conservation. Some lawmakers believe the government has lost billions of tax dollars due to the structure of these deals. Corporate boards are adding to their bench of financial experts who are serving as directors, and current and former chief financial officers are the most in demand. Almost all Fortune 100 companies now report having multiple finance experts who serve on their audit committee, according to an Ernst & Young study. In comparison, just 6 years ago, only a third had an expert, and only one. Don't forget to check out our Insights tab, where tax and accounting professionals weigh in on a variety of issues. This week, a team from Mayor Brown scrutinizes proposed IRS rules on advance payments for goods and services. The regulations stem from the 2017 tax law's effort to curtail so-called creative accounting. That's it for this week's edition. From Washington, I'm Amanda Icone.
Hi, I'm Dori Goldstein.
And I'm Meg McAvoy. We're both legal analysts at Bloomberg Law. It's our job to write, speak, and think about the future of law and the legal industry.
It's a pretty fun job.
It is.
But as co-hosts of Law X.0, we're going to talk about so much more.
And we'll have some backup.
I love you guys.
We're fans.
You're so fun.
So much backup.
It's almost like we're on the uphill of a roller coaster.
Law X.0 is about bringing you the next version of the legal industry.
Yeah, Law X.0 is like 2.0, but X.0, because we don't exactly know what tomorrow will bring.
But whatever it is, we'll make sure you're prepared. We'll be speaking to leading practitioners, former regulators, and lawyers on the front lines of legal change.
It's within that next year that we first start to see the appearance of these clauses in M&A.
We're all becoming M&A experts right now.
We'll feature actionable, data-driven analysis.
Our analysis showed that these three factors correlated to Fifth Circuit judges reversing district court decisions.
And we'll get at the insights behind the law.
Why don't you look at CEO pay? We have found that to be the biggest risk factor.
And uncover something new and unexpected.
It's like a shell game. Accountability to everyone is accountability to nobody.
Hear how the legal world is responding to the companies you're watching and the stories you're reading.
We've seen that at Facebook in the poor response they've had to the number of cases against them.
Law and the legal industry are changing fast.
We are dedicated to seeing around corners and getting you ready for the next version of the legal industry.
Download Law X.0 from Bloomberg Law wherever you get your podcasts.